What's up, everybody? This is episode 139 of the Clappercast. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by Sean. Sean, what's going on?
I am trying to find something to watch because it is now the dead of the All-Star break and teams bye weeks. I think there's been three games in the last 2 days. I don't know what I'm doing with my life anymore.
Yeah, there was a few games tonight, and there's actually a couple of exciting ones where Carolina won in overtime against LA.
Perfect.
And then the Capitals won in overtime against the Columbus. And then I think Ottawa and Montreal were playing, but yeah. I don't know what happened in that game.
Ottawa won because I was checking fantasy and Brady Tkachuk got the game winner.
Oh, nice. That's good.
Points.
But yeah, it's definitely, I don't know, one of the low lights of the season for me where it's just like, all right, I guess the All-Star game I won't watch. I won't watch the skills.
I'll tune into the skills competition just in case something interesting happens. But time and time and time and time again, I am sorely disappointed.
It's always one of those disappointing things because it's like, for everything cool that happens, there's like, it seems to be like 45 minutes of nothing.
Yeah.
Like,
and even the good stuff that happens is such a, it's like good in relative, it's good relative to the other stuff. It's not actually that like fun or exciting.
Well, and it's like the NHL does everything possible to like kill the fun.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like that clip that's kind of been making the rounds again where it's like Kaprizov was like in, I don't know if it's last year, I guess it must have been last year at the All-Star game. He like had the Ovechkin jersey underneath his and like Kuznetsov gave him like one of Ovechkin's helmets and like he did like the breakaway challenge as like dressed as Ovechkin. It's like in the middle of that, there's like an NHL guy on the ice trying to like talk to Kaprizov as he's like skating to center ice. And it's like, now is not the time.
Like, or how about all these players did these cool things like Kaprizov's thing. I think Zegers had a pretty good one. And then fucking Petrangelo goes and does absolutely nothing. I don't even think he
and
scores.
Then voting.
And then the fucking corrupt celebrity voters give Petrangelo the victory.
Yeah, it's like the Ovechkin Kaprizov thing. Like I think the judges gave like 8 and there's one that gives them a 6 and it's like you don't even get the reference, like you're not even a hockey fan.
Yeah. And then
like what did he did like the hot stick and everything, you know, like when he scored and it's just like Petrangelo
goes and like
winning.
Does nothing, misses the net or gets doesn't score or something. Some guy gives him a 10 so he can pander to the home crowd. It's like, well, okay, well I'll just keep
I think it was on. Like John Hamm, because he's like a St. Louis guy. It's like
oh yeah, that was it.
And like it's just, I don't know.
I mean, then the game itself. Exciting. The game itself is just like pond hockey. It's like no one's trying. It's not really that
it's
exciting.
Like offense. It's... No one does defense. Just.
And the offense isn't even that good. It's like basic.
No,
like,
no one wants to get
on
hurt.
Yeah.
So they're just like screwing around playing slow-mo.
Yeah. No one's trying anything. No one's really going for the fancy moves. No one's like
goalies aren't trying because they don't want to pull something or anything. So it's
that I can
like,
kind of understand because it's a risky thing. You don't want to tweak something.
Yeah, and it's I don't know. It's just not for us, I guess.
No, we're not the crowd. We're not the whatever child audience that the NHL wants to market to.
No, like you know, it was really cool when they did the. Like the team captains and they did like a fantasy draft amongst the players and like Ovechkin wanted to be last so he got the car. Like that was fun.
Yeah.
Like when they used to do it that way, but now it's just like team Pacific and team Metro.
And it's
and like
it just ends up being more players get skipped over that probably should get recognized than
like Rasmus Dahlin.
Yeah.
He's not an All-Star.
Exactly, like
okay.
You know, making the whole, like, oh, every team gets somebody, and then you've got just some random, like, someone who'd be, like, a third liner on some other team that's one of the good teams, and they end up having to go to the All-Star game.
Well, it's like I said, like, the NHL does everything to try and kill the fun. Like, you know, when John Scott was winning that All-Star vote, they, like, he got traded and then, like, got sent to the AHL, and everyone was all mad about
and
it.
They and actually...
They were like...
I can't remember who it was in the NHL's head office, probably Colin Campbell, but who I don't know for sure, was trying to get him to pull out. Like, they were actually talking to John Scott and saying, hey, this, like, you know, this isn't for you. This isn't your scene. Like, you just pull out. And basically that's why he ended up going, is because they were trying to tell him no.
Yeah, it's like the fans want it. Like, yeah. Sure, maybe it's a joke, but it's like, that's what we Let want. We want some reason to, like, watch.
Every year there's one of those, every year that there's a fan vote like that, someone gets there. Like, remember that yours was Semgus Girgensons?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think there was one where it was like, what was the guy on the Canucks? Rory?
Yeah, I remember that.
Who was that? Rory Fitzpatrick. Yeah. There was like a Rory Fitzpatrick for All-Star game, and it was like 2007. That's like the first thing that shows up when you Google his name. It's like, you know, All-Star game snub in 2007. Yeah, it's like the fan, they want the fan vote, but it's like only the players that they want to come in.
It's like the impression of an interactive experience.
Yeah. Yeah, the illusion of choice, right? it's really weird. And it's like, this isn't even the weirdest thing. Like, because, like, coming into the break, we had a major trade. Not quite a blockbuster, but a major trade between the Canucks and the New York Islanders, which was kind of surprising to me. Like, were you expecting the Islanders as a landing spot for Bo Horvat?
Bo Horvat. No, he's pretty boring. Horvat. No, I was not, because they weren't a team that is in, like, the playoff bubble that you would expect to show up there. In typical Lou Lamoriello fashion, he keeps his deck, you know, he doesn't show his cards or whatever. So he's not, you know, openly interested in Horvat. They're not openly pursuing him. The organization's tight-lipped and won't actually, like, you know, fuel the rumors or leak anything. So, like you said, just out of nowhere, the Islanders go and pull Horvat. So,
yeah.
And that's that.
Kind of surprising, because they're 2 points out of a playoff spot, out of a wild card spot, that is, and they've, like, their game's back from a couple
the
teams,
two
right?
the so. Two teams that they're chasing most directly being Buffalo in the first runner-up spot and Pittsburgh in the second wild card spot, both have three less games played. So the Islanders have a significantly worse points percentage than the teams that they're directly chasing, which is not a good recipe for, you know, catching up. Cause, like, these teams in the middle are very consistently going to be going like 5-4-1 every 10 games, something like that.
Yeah. And then there's a team that's also in the mix for chasing for that final wild card spot, the Florida Panthers, which are 1 point behind them with the same amount of games played. So, like, it's risky for sure. You know, I think they've been pretty offense dried up lately.
Yeah, they were actually one of the better offensive teams in the league the first, you know, month and a half or so. I think they were kind of near the top, and then it just dried right up. And they're having trouble scoring. Yeah. Their power play's been pretty mediocre. So, you know, on paper, it makes sense to bring Horvat in, because that's kind of what he does. He scores. He's eighth in the league, and he was tied for eighth in the league in goals for yesterday. I don't know if that changed today, but he's someone who can come in and score. And then you've got likely him playing with Barzal. I would imagine that would be the smart combination. Barzal's a talented puck carrier and playmaker, so that could be a potent duo.
Yeah, I mean, you could easily see it on the power play, right, where it's like you get Park Anders Lee in front of the net. You know, Barzal's skating around with the puck, making a pass to Horvat. Horvat shoots, and Lee gets the screen and the rebound.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
That makes sense.
You can see that. But it's, like, apparently, like, Noah Dobson's hurt, perhaps for a questionable amount of time. I'm not sure how long he's going to be out. And then apparently Wahlstrom is done for the season. So like, Wahlstrom was a power play guy for them. Bo Horvat obviously has a spot there. It's just an interesting, like, timing for them to make a trade like this, considering Horvat's done at the end of the season. But anyway, like, they acquire Bo Horvat. They gave up Anthony Beauvillier, and I'm going to murder this, but I think it's Etu Ratu, I think, is the closest I can get in his pronunciation for his name. It's not Ratty. It's not like Ty Ratty. It's not. And then a 2023 first round pick.
Atu Ratu.
Is condition. Yeah.
Apparently.
So it's a 2023 first round pick that's conditional, top 12 protected. And then if it goes to 2024, it is not protected. And Vancouver retained 25% of Bo Horvat's salary. So
which basically made it equal with Beauvillier.
Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of talked about the Islanders' situation right now, but what do you think about the trade, like, removed from any sort of situation in the standings? Like, what's your takeaway?
As a rental, you know, if Horvat becomes a rental for the Islanders, I think the return is okay. I think the Canucks gave up a good player who has more sentimental value due to being the captain and a fan favorite than maybe he is, like, contributing on the ice, because his defensive impact is pretty mediocre, if not below average. He just scores a lot. He's a good scorer, and he's not like an elite scorer because you think he's a 60-point guy.
And he's really good at face-offs. He's not good defensively, but he's good at face-offs.
Yeah. So there's that. So it's not like they got like an elite superstar player. And in return, they gave up like a kind of fledgling midline forward who is a very talented player, Beauvillier, but he has trouble finding a way to make that consistent or make that show up in the NHL. He's topped out at about 40 points. That's where his pace is this season. So it's just kind of another one of those random midline forwards that Canucks are acquiring. Atu Ratu, I mean, prospect who is apparently doing better since his very disappointing draft year that saw him drop way out of the first round. It's hard to say because if it's going to be consistent. I mean, he's played 12 NHL games this year. I think he has 2 goals and no assists, something like that. You know, not it's okay for a debut, but I think the Canucks are going to put him in the AHL anyways. And then that mid-round first round pick that likely will end up around 13 to 15. So for a team like the Canucks, they don't have a good draft history recently. I don't see that turning into much of anything anyways. You know, they might get lucky and get a good player out of it. But if that's a rental, if Horvat's just a rental, he goes elsewhere in the offseason, or the Islanders end up flipping him in a month because they're out of the playoffs even further, that's fine. If Horvat signs long-term in New York, I don't think that's a very good return. Unless, like, Ratu really turns into a top-tier NHL player.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, I see this as just Ratu is the X factor. Like, to be fair to him, like, he was drafted during COVID. And I think there might have been, like, some issues throughout COVID for him. But, like, I'm looking at, like, his points in, like, the Liga, Finnish League, and, like, that year, 2020, 2021, he had 6 points in 35 games. And then the very next season, 2021, 2022, in the Liga, he had 1 point in 6 games for that same team. And then he was on a different team and had 40 points in 41 games.
Yeah. So that's the, like, promising side of it, right?
And then he played in the AHL a couple games that year, played in that World Juniors, and was really good. And then since then has played a few games in the NHL for the Islanders, and he scored 2 goals, and one of them was against the Canucks. Tyler Myers was doing Tyler Myers things. And he's been decent in the AHL. So, like, I think he is the key to this trade. Like, if he turns into, you know, a top 6 forward for them, like,
I think
that's a win.
Probably,
but,
yeah, reasonable.
I'm just nervous that the Canucks are going to just throw him in the lineup and just, you know, looks like a kid that was turning things around is going to just, you know, end up
destroy his
rushing
confidence
it.
And, yeah, rushing
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Which then, is a concern, because the Canucks are looking an awful lot like the Oilers teams that were rushing prospects in and screwing them up. And also, I saw an Instagram video earlier today kind of pointing out the contrast or the similarities here, because I was talking about this in our last episode, how, and just now, how kind of this Canucks era is similar to the Oilers when they were kind of going through their decade of darkness, the early days. The Ryan Smith trade, when Edmonton traded away Ryan Smith back in, whatever, 2007, the return was Ryan O'Meara, Robert Nilsson, and what turned out to be a 15th overall pick that they drafted Alex Plante, who played like a handful of games in the NHL. There's a really similar amount in that return for Bo Horvat. And I mean, Smith and Horvat kind of similar stature within their cities. I mean, fan favorites, you know, clear leader, you know, solid offensive player, scorer, gets traded away. They kind of get, you know, I don't really know what Ryan O'Meara was. I think he was an okay-ish prospect. Robert Nilsson was supposed to be pretty talented, but he fizzled out pretty quickly, and the pick turned into nothing. So I just see the similarity in the value of the return back for these two trades.
Yeah, and it's also the second time that the Canucks have traded their captain to the Islanders, because they've also traded Trevor Linden to the Islanders out of the whole Messier fiasco in the 90s. So that's kind of an interesting piece as well. And then it's also like Lou Lamoriello traded away the pick that turned into Bo Horvat to acquire Corey Schneider, and now they're both on the same team under Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah.
So it's kind of
interesting how
things are all connected. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think like it's, you know, it depends if Horvat signs an extension, and I think he came out and said that they didn't talk about that before the trade.
Yeah, they haven't. They haven't yet either.
So it for me, it's really just boils down to Ratu. If he's, you know, can turn into that player that was originally scouted, and I think he's on the cusp of like kind of turning into that, but it's like he can't be rushed. You gotta develop him and let him turn into that player and just, you know, coach him along. But the Canucks just can't do that with anyone. So I'm not sure. I mean, like, look at what like Pod Colson, Hoglander, like, yeah, you put them in the right away, they look okay, but it's like that's as good as they're gonna get unless you go back, play more minutes, get development, you know.
Yeah. Did you see, I think it was in the Rick Tocchet intro press conference, the introduction press conference for Rick Tocchet, there we go, that I can't remember if it was Rutherford or Alvin or Tocchet, one of the three of them specifically called out Hoglander and Pod Colson in the media that they'd been disappointing. Name drop the two of them for that.
Yeah, so great.
Yeah.
Fucking, you've been disappointing, asshole.
Like, he's been the most disappointing of all, if it was Rutherford that said that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like a shitty culture. Like,
yeah.
Regardless of how you feel as Boudreaux as a coach, like just, you know, treating someone like that after it's been leaked to the press and not just immediately firing the guy and just saying, like, we don't want to treat you like this. You know, word's gotten out that this is what we're doing. You know, I want to be open with you. We are doing that. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and then let him go and have, you know, your boy Mikey O take over as the intern for 2 weeks until Tocchet can get in.
Exactly. It's not hard.
Yeah.
How many franchises have done that, right?
Yeah, you get an intern coach for a couple.
If it's not working, it's not working. Like, just get rid of the guy.
Hell, the Panthers had an interim coach for most of the season. They had one of the best seasons ever. Still got rid of them. But
and then they got rid of them, yeah. And then it's not working for them. Yeah.
Bold move, Cotton.
Yeah, it's not playing out. I was actually talking to a guy on my hockey team about that the other day, just about how, like, Paul Maurice with the Panthers. Like,
it's such a weird one.
Such a weird fit, and it doesn't seem to be working.
No.
I mean, we briefly mentioned it, but yeah, like they're lower than the Islanders in standings. So, albeit very minimally, but they are below them. So yeah, I mean, like, it's an interesting move for the Islanders, you know, trying to make a push, trying to showcase maybe some of the guys on their team that, like, yeah, we are going to try and go all in. But yeah, it's like a Lou Lamoriello, like, slowing his pulse to like a crawl, like making his move from the shadows like way later than anyone expected him to. Like, you know, in the off season it was like, oh, are they gonna get Kadri? Are they gonna make a trade or
sign Kadri, sign Gaudreau?
Just no, we're not gonna do anything, and then, you know, here we have a move. So yeah, it's interesting. I mean, like, how many years does Beauvillier have left? I think two, including this year, maybe.
Oh, wrong team. I go and click on the Islanders to find Beauvillier. Good job.
Yeah. yeah, he's signed until the end of next season.
So he's got like a year, basically. A year, and yeah, that's, you know, 30 games.
So it's like you're taking on most of the money that Horvat was making for an extra season for Horvat, for a worse player.
Yeah, who isn't your captain and a fan favorite.
A guy who thought he was going to be a Canuck forever.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, like, nobody should think that they'll be a Canuck forever.
No, right? I'm pretty sure they kind of said it was open season. They listen to offers on anyone, and I've started seeing random rumblings about Demko recently, too.
Yeah, which I, like,
that would be the stupidest move ever.
I don't understand that one, because I've seen, like, Friedman has said, like, yeah, like, he suspects that, you know, they're taking calls on him, and it's like, he's at his all-time lowest value right now.
Yeah.
I think he's got one of the worst save percentages in the league. He's hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what are you going to get for him?
And you know,
that makes it worthwhile.
Like, you know how good he can be, and, like, look at other teams making deep runs, and look at teams that are experiencing success. Like, a common theme is that they have an all-star, like, elite-level goalie, and Thatcher Demko was basically the only reason the Canucks were competitive the past two seasons in any way, being just an out-of-this-world goalie. So, like, yeah, he's 27, so he's, you know, what's he probably got a few more years of the level was at anyways. So the only reason I could see that they trade him is that they don't anticipate being competitive in Demko's prime, and that it's more valuable for them to trade him rather than waste his good years.
Yeah, I still don't understand it, because it's like the guy had a bad year. He's at his low.
Mm-hmm.
He's got three more years at $5 million.
Which is great, considering the team's
cap
situation.
Which is great. You're better off to let him come back next season, let him show that his numbers are good, and then trade him and get, like, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, first, couple firsts or whatever you can get for a goalie at that time. But it's just like, I saw an Instagram post, and it was like Sportsnet, or maybe it was like Tim and Friends or something, and it was like, where is Demko going to end up? And it was like, LA, Pittsburgh. And it was like, so does he stay with Vancouver? And it's like, why would Pittsburgh want Demko? Like, I just don't get it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it doesn't make sense considering where they are in their, like, competitive window, but it's, I don't know, Pittsburgh's usually in on somebody. But it's it's usually like a random midline forward that they can turn into a top line forward.
Well, yeah, it's like that meme where it's like, you know, Malkin can play with like two guys named like Bonk and like Jimman, and like he puts up like 70 points or something.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, that's the type of guy that they'll get. They'll get like some rando guy who like can play with Crosby.
Oh, that's
or like
exactly,
went to school with Crosby's nephew or some weird thing like that. And it's just like, oh yeah, we'll trade for that guy.
Oh yeah, I mean, you turn Brian Rust into a household name for a few seasons. They go and get Zucker, Raquel, and Jeff Carter, and turn them into extremely productive players again for a bit.
Yeah,
prolong Jeff Carter's career by a couple of seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think the Demko thing makes sense, because it's like he literally has one of the worst save percentages in the league. So like, who's coming knocking? Unless they think that that's like buy low, but then like why would the Canucks want to move him right now? You know, like
they don't exactly make the smartest decisions.
Well, that they could move him and then use that money to sign Horvat.
True.
In the off season. But no, they just took on Beauvillier, so they can't.
Yeah, I don't know, because they go and re-sign Kuzmenko, mm-hmm. who's making $5.5 million next year, and then they trade for Beauvillier, who's making 4.15. Like, that's Horvat in there.
It's like $10 million.
Yeah. That, you know, Horvat's what's he going to be, 7?
Yeah.
I get wanting to keep Kuzmenko. He's going to be a valuable trade chip probably in the next year or the year after, but they go in and make all these moves, make it look like they can't keep Horvat. Like, they pushed him out.
Oh, well, yeah, if you like, do the math, right? It's like...
They prioritize literally every other player but Horvat.
Yeah, it's like if you do the math with all these contracts and stuff, it's like you could have easily given the guy 8.
They could have not traded for Beauvillier, gotten an extra draft pick, and had $4.15 million right there, and then some random, you know, defender making $2 million or something they don't need to re-sign, or they replace with a cheaper option, suddenly they free up $6 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, getting closer to what Horvat is worth.
Yeah, and I'm not an expert on, like, how LTIR works, but, like, Ilya Mikheyev just got shut down for the season until, like, next year. So it's, like, he's making 4.7. So it's, like, depending on how that works,
mm-hmm.
you could have maybe tried to make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, like, to get a first is, like, good. And it's, like, if the Islanders do miss playoffs, it's, like, good, but then it's top 12 protected, so it's like does it mean anything?
Well, yeah, they basically it's basically like if the Islanders get any worse than they are right now, they're not getting that pick, and if the Islanders get any better, it's just a worse pick.
Yeah, so it's like what's the point?
And it's and like I said before, we've seen Vancouver's draft history the last like 5-6 years. Like, what are the chances they make anything of this pick anyways?
Yeah, it's not great. And then, yeah, I mean, like, the Kuzmenko thing, like, it's risky because, you know, it's his first year in the league. I think, what's his shooting percentage? Like, probably inflated, if I was to guess. But I see that as a total, like, placate Pettersson move, where it's like, he has good chemistry with Kuzmenko. Keep Pettersson happy. Make him know that, like, we do have pieces for the future.
you said inflated?
Yeah.
24.7.
Yeah, there you go.
And actually, there is a... looking at the at Hockey Reference here, it's actually in bold, which is usually indicative of, like, a league... Like, he's got the highest shooting percentage in the league.
Yeah, okay, so I called it. But yeah, it's like, you know, he likes playing with... Pettersson likes playing with him, so I see that as a, like, we're going to keep your guy. Stick around, because Pettersson's only signed until the end of next season, and then he's an RFA. And why would he stay? Like, why would he choose to re-sign there? You know? Do you think that the Canucks will be competitive during his next contract?
Well, probably not. Yeah, probably not. So let's see. Pettersson, 24. So RFA at the end of next season.
You know, they're still going to have Ekman-Larsson. JT Miller's making 8. You know, Connor Garland's at 5. Mikheyev's at 5. Like, there's going to be a bit of roster turnover here, but, like...
There's no way they're competitive. It depends how long Pettersson signs for. If I don't know, I don't know exactly the RFA to UFA status when that happens. So, like, I don't know, does Pettersson sign, like, a 1 or 2 year bridge to give them a chance and then goes and makes, you know, once he hits UFA status, he goes elsewhere? Or does he just sign the 8 year deal now?
I mean, I think that's kind of what he was on now. Like, he's on a 3 year deal right now,
right
in the middle of it. So I think that was kind of a bridge.
Okay.
I mean, he Cap Friendly says he's an RFA, but, like, I think that he might not want to stay. That's my belief, anyway, just because of, like, you know, there's comments from, like, his agent saying he wants to play, like, competitive hockey, and it's, like, mm-hmm. he doesn't owe the Canucks anything.
No. No, and the like
they've gotten worse.
Yeah, they're just getting worse. In the state that they're in right now, like, they have no prospect pool. They have a roster of complete mishmash of random players. They have, like, a superstar at each position, but they haven't done anything to build around that, and they've done nothing but make, like, a shitty dressing room and a shitty culture around them. So this is going to take, like, years, if not a decade, to correct. By the time you get out all the toxic trash, build up a prospect pool, build up a pipeline, build up an actual cycle and turnover of prospects developing. Like, this is going to take years to fix. Yeah. So, like, Pettersson's going to be, you know, aging out of his career by the time the Canucks are truly competitive, in my thoughts, my opinion.
If they ever are, yeah.
Yeah. Like, this, you know, they're not going to, I don't think this type of roster is, like, one superstar away from turning it around. Like, if they go and get, like, Bedard or something, that's not going to turn the whole team around. There's still too much trash around.
Yeah. I don't know. My friend just texted me if the Canucks and Penguins will do a 1-for-1 Jari for Demko. It's like, that's never going to happen.
Why?
I guess because Jari's from BC. It's like, no one can, like, Rutherford doesn't
Demko
care.
Demko from Pennsylvania?
I don't know. I think he might be from Massachusetts.
San Diego.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, he's a Boston College guy. That's what I was thinking.
That would be pointless.
Yeah, it's like, why would Pittsburgh want a guy who's got, like, an 840
like, yeah,
on the season?
Like, why would Pittsburgh want that? They're actually competitive. And, like, what does that accomplish for either team?
Like, there's no way.
Neither team is better off with that, with the other player.
Let's trade for a guy who's doing worse.
Yeah.
No.
Like, literally both teams lose in that situation.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
But, yeah, I mean, like, the Canucks have to do some serious trading here to gain some ground, but, like, it's not an overnight process. But, you know, the rumor is that Brock Besser has been linked with the Minnesota Wild for a while.
That's been years.
And the expectation or rumor is that...
is it Matt Dumba still?
Matt Dumba would be coming back the other way. But it's like, does that really make your team better? You know?
It fills a need for a defender, but Dumba's also been not good this season. And yeah, also, honestly, this exact trade, Besser for Dumba, has been a rumor for, like, 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And it's never happened.
Well, and it's like, sure, maybe you improve your defense, but at that point, your offense is now
useless. Yeah, unless they see...
you've gotten rid of Horvat and...
Yeah, and then Besser. Unless they see Kuzmenko as the... Unless they see Kuzmenko coming in as a replacement for a Besser type or something.
I mean, I think he's better offensively now, but I could see that trade happening because Besser is a Minnesota guy. But it's not a good trade for
not at this point.
Canucks.
I would have said yes to this, like, 2 seasons ago when it first started coming up. I was like, okay, that makes sense because the Canucks need defense. They can afford to give up the sniper, and this would work for them because it helps improve their roster when they were actually, like, sort of looking like they were trying to compete. But now it's like, well, does it, you know, yeah, you get a better defender and I think save a little bit of cap space. But it doesn't
do
anything.
Pesser's still a, you know, an okay offensive guy, but like his shot is gone now. Like he is more of a passing guy. I think he's kind of suffered from some injuries and had to change his game up a little bit, but like he's at 6.6 million too, right? So is that like 30 points this season? I don't know, man. It's just, I don't think they're done trading yet, but like they really have to bolster their prospect pool, and that should be the intent. But getting guys like Beauvillier back isn't helping you whatsoever.
No.
So, I don't know. I think it's like they got what they wanted, but what they wanted was stupid.
Well, you know? Yeah, that's exactly it. What they wanted was stupid. It wasn't the right package they could have gotten.
No.
You know, like why? I guess the other thing too is like we're talking about trading Besser. It's like why wouldn't you cap dump Besser for some draft picks and then he can sign Horvat? You know?
Yeah. Why wouldn't you try to make that trade first? Maybe they have.
Maybe they didn't get what they felt was a good enough package back for Besser if he's struggling.
Like, so what? You make a bad trade and then you sign your captain.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
I don't know. It doesn't. It really doesn't. I don't know. But moving away from the Canucks, I guess.
You want to know what else doesn't make sense?
Yeah, what?
The Los Angeles Kings are tied for the division lead with a negative 10 goal differential.
Ooh.
this actually, I was looking into this for a different article I was writing, and a division leader hasn't had a negative goal differential since the 2011-2012 Florida Panthers.
Wow.
This was back in the days of the Southeast Division.
Oh yeah. Those are beautiful days.
Yeah. But it's really weird because goal differential is kind of one of those things that generally speaking, positive goal differential in the playoffs, negative goal differential out. Here's the Kings, negative 10 goal differential on the season, but they're somehow tied with Seattle for the division lead. Now, they also have a lot more games played, so the points percentage is off, but you know, they still have the same amount of points.
Yeah, like, where does that come from? Like, did they just get blown out in a few games or what?
I think that's it. When I was looking into it, a lot of the goal differential is pretty consistent in you know, stretches throughout the season. They gave up a lot of goals early on when Cal Peterson was struggling. They've given up less goals since. But when they lose, they seem to lose by, like, 3 or 4 or 5 goals.
And oh, yeah.
They get blown out quite a bit, so that's kind of like, yeah, their offense is good, and they're scoring a lot when they're playing well, when they're good. So they're getting saved by their offense in a lot of games. But when they lose big.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm just taking a look at Hockey Reference, their little bar graph that they have, which is amazing. I love that. They've lost to Buffalo 6-0, and they've lost to Toronto 5-0, Dallas 4-0. And the very beginning of the season, they lost to Pittsburgh 6-1. So I think that's probably where that's coming from, is those are 3 games where they lost by 5.
Yeah. So that's going to really skew that differential, skew the ratio a bit.
So if you pull those 3 kind of anomaly type situations out, I wonder, like, their goal differential is obviously
positive
15, like 15 ahead of that, so plus 5.
Yeah.
So that makes more sense. It's just like they had 3 absolute just dumpster games.
They don't seem to blow anyone out, but they do get blown out.
Yeah, and like I'm taking a look, like the very next game after that 6-1 loss to Pittsburgh, they lost 3-4 against the Caps, and then they won their next game. That Toronto loss is sandwiched between 2 wins. That Buffalo like destroy game where they lost by six. They won the next game. So like, seems like they're able to bounce right back mm-hmm. from those losses, which is good to see for a team. You know, impressive to bounce back from just getting shit kicked like that and come out and at least lose a close one or win the next game. So that's interesting. Like, I mean, like their team that won the cup, like, you know, they were the bottom seed. So if they can bounce back from a loss like that, that's cool to see for a Kings fan. Yeah, it's weird though. Definitely weird.
Now, I think I interrupted you when I brought that up. What direction were you heading?
Oh, I was going to say that the Edmonton Oilers have been linked with like rumors, you know, for basically all season for trades.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that I keep seeing is like Erik Karlsson.
Oh God. I thought I had finally stopped seeing those, and now we're bringing it up again.
No, I saw it again.
Don't
man.
Fucking traumatize me.
Yeah. So, do you think that the Oilers would make a trade like that, or do you think that there's anybody else kind of on their radar?
Here, okay. Here's
the
thing.
At this point,
I think the Oilers would absolutely make a trade like that because it is an absolutely terrible idea that will hamper the team's cap situation that is already terrible.
Yeah.
I think they would absolutely make that trade thinking it's going to make the team better. They're going to go and give up a whole bunch of stuff for a guy like Erik Karlsson, who's going to be good for 30 games in the playoffs this year and then get hurt next season, then be on LTIR. So unless that's their plan to make their cap situation better by putting Karlsson on LTIR, they should not be touching this situation with a 10-foot pole.
You don't want to pay $11.5 million until 2026.
No, they already have Darnell Nurse doing that.
Yeah, I think it's crazy that a team would want to take that on. Like,
no,
I don't
it's
know if the Sharks can retain. I don't know if they've retained anything else, but
I mean, they'd absolutely have to retain because there's no way the Oilers can give up $11.5 million of cap space.
I mean, like,
they don't have that
the
much.
Only reason you would do it is if there's another team in there and they also retained.
Yeah.
And like you got them like an absolute steal.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I mean, like Karlsson looks phenomenal this season, but yeah, has obviously had some injury issues.
He's been.
But he also thrives when he's like the guy.
Mm-hmm. So
and in Edmonton, I don't know if he would be the only guy.
On defense, he would be the guy because Nurse is a two-way. He's not like an offensively flashy guy. He's a two-way guy. And behind him, it's like Tyson Barrie, Evan Bouchard, Broberg, and Kulak. None of them are standout players. So obviously Barrie would probably be going the other way because they don't need Karlsson and Barrie on the same team. So Carlson's the guy on defense, but you're absolutely right. He's not going to be the guy because McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, you know, Hyman, Kane, you know, he's going to be secondary to them because he's going to be feeding and contributing to that offense.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, you know, Brent Burns is gone in San Jose, and, like, look at how much better Erik Karlsson is. Like,
yeah.
It's not the only thing that changed, but, like, you know, he's able to just run that power play all the time, and his point totals has skyrocketed. He's, you know, probably healthier. But like when he was in Ottawa, he was like, he was that team and like, he just carried that team on his back. I don't know. I mean, like he's a great player and I think that there's a lot of people who would want them on their team, but like what you'd have to give up for him right now is just so risky.
Oh yeah. I mean, they'd have to give up Barrie and just for roster composition reasons, they'd probably have to give up Puljujarvi / Yamamoto / Fogel, just for cap space reasons. They would have to give up at least one first round pick and probably a very good prospect, likely Philip Broberg. That would be kind of like the minimum that I would imagine would be the package going the other way. And that's too much. I don't see that is benefiting the team long term. Because then you're going to have Karlsson, who's good for a little bit until he's hurt again and then aging out. and you suddenly just completely decimated your prospect pool.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, like, because, you know, you see people who are like, the Oilers need to go all in, like, while, you know, their guys are doing what they're doing.
Yeah, there's going all in, and then there's just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks, honestly.
Is there a less risky guy on a better contract that you would prefer that they go after?
If they go after a defender, impact? They need someone
who's
more
strictly defense. Just saying.
Okay, fair. I look at defense because that's kind of where the key issue is this season. If they go after a defender, it should be somebody who's more responsible defensively. You know, as simple as that, because they have enough offense on their defense in terms of player composition and types. Jacob Chychrun and Matthias Ekholm are the two.
I was thinking Ekholm, yeah. I think Saravalli, I think, was saying
yeah.
that.
Yeah, Ekholm's a bit expensive, but if Nashville is going to stop competing and selling, then they might be able to swing it to make it cheaper, take some, you know, bit of a cap dump or retain salary and make it doable. I like Ekholm because I think he's like a quiet, reliable two-way guy who can play kind of anywhere and anywhere on defense. And to me, like, putting him on the second pairing with Nurse gives you two pairings who can kind of split the time. And it also gives Evan Bouchard a responsible defender to play alongside. Chychrun has an amazing contract, and I would, you know, he's kind of probably the best value on the market right now. But he's also going to be expensive, and he's also injury prone. I think he's missed like a third of the total games in his entire career, something like that. So I look at Ekholm more. And then you've got your other ones like Joel Edmondson and Vladislav Gavrikov.
But I was thinking Gavrikov too.
Yeah, I'm hesitant on them because their impact is hard to measure. And they tend to, in recent years, be getting very overpaid returns. Like David Savard, Ben Chiarot. Getting as much as they did in the return package. Like, you look at Edmondson and Gavrikov, that's kind of what they're looking at is like a first and a third for Gavrikov. It seems like a lot for someone whose impact is hard to measure and who doesn't seem to be as good as he was, like, a couple seasons ago.
I mean, just anecdotally, like, the Capitals are playing the Columbus Blue Jackets today. Gavrikov looks good.
Yeah.
He makes some good plays out there, holding the line and breakouts.
He's a shutdown guy. He's a quiet shutdown guy. And he's, you know, what I've read about him is that he's very good at containing offense, that he doesn't, like, there isn't much going on offensively for the other team when he's out there. So something like that would be fantastic for the Oilers because they tend to give up a lot of other offense to the other team. But yeah. I also, like, is he worth that price? Especially if they can't re-sign him. I think he's a free agent at the end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I just know that, every team is different. If they go on to win, like, the path is not the same for anyone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, the Capitals tried getting the big fish out there and ended up making the team worse. And then they got a guy like Kempney, and it was like, it just worked.
Mm-hmm.
It just added an extra stable guy to the D pairings so that everyone could play where they needed to in the lineup, and it just smoothed things out, and it just ran like clockwork. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when guys like Gavrikov or, you know, players like that, where they're just like a stable, less noticeable, not a flashy guy. In the back of my mind, I always think, like, that's who I would be targeting if I was, like, a team on the cusp or, like, wanting to make a push. But for a first, yeah, like, that's...
I mean, okay,
you
the
get
intention...
A, you can get a Bo Horvat for a first.
Yeah.
Get rid of your worst player.
You know, the hope is that it would be a late first. You know, you're not giving up, you know, like a 26 to 32 or something. But, you know, you never know. If it doesn't work out, then you're giving up, like, a mid-first-round pick.
I mean, hey, like, what about a guy like Luke Shen?
That's another option that I keep seeing, too, because, you know, he's someone who could contribute something the Oilers' defense was kind of lacking for a long time. A big
and
physical.
And he's won.
And he's won, and he's got the experience, and I think that would be someone you could probably get for, like, a third.
Yeah, cheaper. Definitely cheaper. And an absolutely great contract that you can just sneak in. Absolutely. Like, that's the type of guy, right? Like, just
I would be more than happy if the Oilers brought Shen in. You know, I'm quite pleased with the job that Vincent Desharnais has done since he got into the Oilers lineup. But, I mean, I don't mind pushing him out for the rest of the season if they can get Shen in.
Hey, and, like, extra depth is always great.
Exactly.
Playoffs because guys get hurt and, you know.
Especially when they're physical shot-blocking defenders. They're going to wear themselves out, get hurt, you know.
Yeah. And I think a guy like Shen would be at the top of the list. Like,
yeah.
I like Gavrikov, but, like, I've watched Shen more and just the amount of heart he plays with and, like, just what he does for his teammates and just, like, what you've seen on a struggling team of the Canucks and just, like, you know, he's vocal. He's, like, seems to be a great locker room guy from everything that, you know, both reporters and other people have said. And he's been part of winning cultures and has won. Like, why wouldn't you bring that guy in?
100%.
I think that'd be an interesting one. Like, it's just, it's not always like those big flashy guys, right? So, yeah. And it was also great news for the Oilers that Kane came back as well. So, like, there was all those rumors about filling his spot in the lineup with, like, you know, it was like, we talked about, like, Tarasenko and stuff, and it's like, they don't really need to do that anymore.
Exactly. He's been a bit slow getting back into the lineup, but that's kind of a given, you know, two or three months off or whatever, and you know, the type of injury he had, his shot and his hands are going to be a bit slow to catch up, so.
Yeah,
he kind of came back for a handful of games, and now the Oilers are off for a week and a half, so he's got some time to, you know, recover up again.
Yeah. Yep. Well, is there anybody else on the I don't know, trade bait list or anything that you would want to add, or anybody you think that might get traded?
It's still, you know, I'm just starting to get into the trade season because, you know, yesterday was the first major trade. But, you know, I'm looking at Nashville as a team that might start selling a bit. I think they're finding themselves a little bit. Like, they're 3 points back of Colorado, who's getting hot right now for a wild card spot. So I see them as being hard-pressed to make the playoffs. It could be the time for them to start looking at selling off some players. I could imagine that someone like Mikael Granlund or Nito Niederreiter's having a really good season as well. Team would be interested in them for depth. We talked about Mattias Ekholm moving over. I mean, we talked about Columbus with Gavrikov. I think he just got hurt, but he would have been one of my top targets as Gustav Nyquist.
Yeah.
So as someone who could probably fetch a return, for teams looking for some forward depth, you know, like Jack Roslovic or Sean Corrali would be great options.
Yeah. And there's some big name forwards that might be available. Patty Kane, Tarasenko,
O'Reilly.
Yeah. O'Reilly, Larkin. Apparently.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it could be an interesting trade deadline. I know we're a ways out, but
yeah, we're about a month away, just over a month. So
yeah.
You know, shall we ring the bell as if trade season officially open?
Yeah. I mean, this might prompt, some more people to make their moves now.
Yeah. The market's kind of been set for certain things.
Yeah. And we didn't even talk about how Horvat is going to the All-Star game and he's going to not wear an Islanders jersey. Which is absolutely insane.
But it's absolutely hilarious that he's going to the All-Star game to represent the team that just traded him away. I would have thought maybe like he would still represent the Pacific, but they give him like a generic Pacific Division jersey or something. instead of one. I assume the jersey is like All-Star, but that has like the Canucks logo on it or something. They just turned that into NHL logo for him. But
you should just have both. Make it fun. Yeah, like, just put both logos.
He'll imagine if the can Pacific play for both. Ends up playing the Metro.
Yeah.
He's just going to like hop agent. Over benches. Yeah, he'll hop over the other bench every other time.
He'll be wanting to pass to like Patterson, but he's on the other team. Yeah.
But, you know.
I don't know.
Kind of a weird one.
It is weird. And it's
or even just
fun.
Like get another new Pacific Division guy and the Metro has an extra player. Like whatever.
Yeah. Just call someone up. Apparently... Is this a thing? I haven't read the stories, but isn't there no one from the Kraken? Because Beniers was supposed to go and got hurt, and
correct.
Then they asked the Kraken if anyone else wanted to go, and then someone said no.
Yeah.
So they're not going to have any representation.
That's what I heard. They.
So why don't they just, like, let Horvat not go? Like...
Yeah,
I don't know.
I find it funny. Apparently, they asked like four players. It's expected that Eberle and McCann were the two players they asked. I mean, Eberle's gone to a couple of All Star games, so it's like whatever. He's out on vacation already. McCann's out on vacation already. You know, I don't think the weekend is that important for some of these guys that they're gonna cancel their vacation with family to go BS with hockey players again for the weekend in Florida.
Yeah, might have been like Vince Dunn or something, but.
That wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.